The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
While I was sitting here, I was thinking, why do we practice? And that's a good question to ask ourselves. Why do we practice? To define our aspiration, to give our practice energy, direction, sincerity, to keep ourselves out of trouble. And as I was sitting here, I was thinking, a lot of thoughts came to my mind, but fundamentally, to fulfill my heart's desire. Another phrase came up, to find my true home. So those are nice desires. Those are big desires. But we have all kinds of other desires that we describe to ourselves in Vipassana, like I think a really important one is to ease our suffering. I think we can all relate to that. To find ease, to find well-being, to find some peace, to find some space between our demons and our being, to find some liberation. I think it's a good idea to think about this, to think about why am I practicing? Maybe every day. To define it to yourself. Another big one for me is I can't think of anything more interesting to do. It's like creating a new painting every moment. So we have this heart-mind, and that's all we have, and this heart-mind continues and continues and continues, and we practice with it. So today I wanted to discuss a little bit the three-legged stool of practice. One leg being samadhi, another leg being sila, another leg being vipassana. Samadhi, I'm using that term loosely, as concentration practice. We, in this sangha, for the most part, follow our breathing. Well, that's a concentration practice. And we are aware of our feet as we do walking meditation. So I'm not talking about refined jhana states. I'm just talking about sutipatthana, just a mindfulness practice of breathing and where other things can happen, where it's not a total absorption. And ethics, we have the precepts, we have the Eightfold Path. You may not know this, but in Buddhist psychology, the two foundational posts to all of ethics, this may sound strange, but are shame and fear of blame. And I was thinking that's why so many Catholics and Jews are practitioners. And then wisdom, vipassana. In Eastern traditions, most people just practice ethics. I say just, I shouldn't use that word. Most people, monks included, practice ethics. Very few practitioners practice what we do, which is this kind of meditation. There is a large percentage of practitioners who use some kind of mantra. So that could be a concentration practice. Namo ho Kie Butsu or something like that, is a very widely used one. But for the most part, they begin and end with ethics and generosity. And that clears the path for them. That brings them all of the benefits to a greater or lesser degree than that I just described. It doesn't matter where you pick it up. If you pick up the stool with any of those legs, it all works. In this country, we all start with meditation. So that's samadhi practice. My teacher Suzuki Roshi said, just sit. Everything will be revealed if you just sit. He also said, be good. So through samadhi practice, concentration, we see a lot. We get some sense through our samadhi practice that everything is changing from moment to moment. Sensations keep changing. The light keeps changing. The sounds keep changing. We get some sense that this is all changing. And because it's all changing, we get some sense, some dim sense. Sometimes it gets clearer and clearer, but at least some dim sense that we are not a self, that we are a continually changing a set of skandhas, set of consciousness, and mental objects, feelings, and so forth. Just this ongoing process. So that sense gives us some space from our suffering. So there you have it, suffering, impermanence, and no self. Those markers become apparent through samadhi. So one might ask, how much samadhi is enough? And I say, just enough to see. There is an inclination among practitioners to extend and extend and extend one's samadhi, especially in retreats. I remember in one sesshin where I envisioned myself as Jesus Christ on the cross, and I'm Jewish. I don't know where that came from, but I was ecstatic. I want to really get into this. I want to develop this. And it just got more and more light and very, very blissful. And I told my teacher, you know, I had finally arrived. And whap. Very, very disappointing. So samadhi is not an end in itself. You know, we're this process that continues and continues and continues. It's always changing, and there's not one state that we can call ourselves or that we can really cling to as permanent. But the good of samadhi is that it helps us, it calms our mind so we can see. So we can see our karma. So we can see how we get ourselves into trouble. So we can see how we create our suffering. And as we see how we create our suffering, we might be able to see some way to ease it. And a good way to ease our suffering that we can really hang our hat on is ethics, all of the, you know, codes of conduct that we've learned. But we can see it in action. If we don't say something that's harmful, even if we might want to, the karma of that situation is the waves are calmed, and we can continue and with a lot less trouble for ourselves. If we're enraged and we don't act on it, we just hold it and hold it and hold it, we don't harm ourselves that much. Of course it hurts, but we don't harm ourselves that much. We don't create some kind of marker that will fester. And it goes away. And we don't create trouble with other people that will come back to haunt us. And the same goes for, of course, greed, obsession. So we see that self-restraint will help us to find all these fruits that I discussed at the beginning of this talk. It'll help us to find some ease, some peace. I was at a family, nuclear family event for my birth family where all the buttons in me were originated, and they were some of them were being pressed. And I could just watch it and restrain myself and know that this is going to change. This isn't me. That I could actually walk outside and there's going to be a whole nother me looking at trees. And it just continues. So, practice is hard sometimes, or practice can be hard a lot of the time. And we can get really angry at ourselves because we feel like we're not doing it right, because we're not completely at peace, that we aren't the way we think that we should be. But it's always perfect all the time, and it always continues, and there's nothing to be gained. We just continue practicing. And sometimes there's a little bit of fruit. Sometimes there's a lot of fruit. But in any case, we can't help ourselves. We're stuck with this. I think there's something irrevocable about practice. We just can't stop. It's like being married. Even if you get divorced, you can't stop. You're still always married. Okay, well, thank you very much.